Hey, Stackers, we got a fantastic episode coming up. But just wanted to tell you that August 22nd, if you're in the Anaheim, California area, we are going to be there. The whole behind the scenes, Stacky Benjamin's team and I, that'll be Kathleen Selmans, our business partner, Richie Rutter-Reese, the show producer, and of course, our community manager, Shannon Mathis-Cohen. We're all going to be there. Plus, Roger Whitney's coming from the Retirement Answer Man show, and El Martinez from the Couple Money podcast. And I think we'll have a few surprises too. So that's August 22nd at McFadden's. That is in Anaheim, California. We'll be there at 6:30 p.m. Come join us. And if you're going to join us, email me and let me know. joe@stackingbenjamins.com. Just find me on Twitter. Let me know that you're coming so that we can make sure we've got enough room for everybody. All right. We'd love to see you. That's August 22nd, McFadden's in Anaheim.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 0, all engine running. Liftoff.
Live from Joe's Mom's half-finished basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today on the show, the whole team down here is having a challenge to prove who's the biggest master of their cash flow. It's feeling tense around here, you know, watching every penny. Know what I mean? So the person who holds out the longest, you know, from overspending, that is, will be the master cash flow-er of the basement. This is all because today on the show, we welcome the author of Master Your Cash Flow, Al Zenick. Also, it's Social Security Day, so we've got headlines on that. We'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky listener, answer your money letters, and also have some amazing trivia. And now, two guys taking cash flow mastery into their own hands, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Big news here right at the top of the show. OG found out our business partner Kathleen, she just bought a ShamWow, so she's gone, one down.
Have you ever used a ShamWow?
Never used a ShamWow. No,
they're pretty sweet.
Not never used one. Kathleen now has one, and bam, she's gone. So that leaves Yumi, Richie, and Shannon. Hey everybody, I am Joe Salcy, High Average Joe Money on Twitter, on the Twitter feeder. And across the tweeter machine, and across from this card table here, another guy who is kind of on the tweeter machine, but we can't tell you who he is over there. It's the one and only other guy.
Because you'd never figure it out if you had to.
Yeah, that's right. He never, ever retweets our stuff or
never
participates in conversations online. Yeah, nope. We don't do that. So big day here in the basement. Al Zenick coming down. Cash flow is, he says, obviously it's the key. Amazon best-selling author. Definitely going to learn about that. Social Security Day today. Happy Social Security Day. How are you going to celebrate?
Ooh, I am going to celebrate by taking my financial plan and having the amount of Social Security I'm planning on getting just to see how much longer I have to work for.
I thought you were going to say, I'm going to pretend like I'm getting all of it. Like it's really going to be around.
Yeah,
I thought you were saying having Social Security, but you said halving, H-A-L-V.
H-A-L-V.
Yeah, cutting it in half.
Have it.
Yeah. You know, the one thing you don't have to have, OG, is your love for M1 Finance, because back in the Stone Age, I know. Sorry.
That's stupid.
That's the best I could do, man. That's as good as it gets. Because back in the Stone Age, you know, those days before M1 Finance, investing your money on your own was intimidating, time-consuming, and expensive. You had to calculate and input every trade you wanted to make. And then you were hit with a commission every time you clicked a button.
You know what's
funny? I hear this and I'm like, this was my entire career. What's the big deal? It's not that. Yeah. But you don't have to do any of this stuff that I took for granted my entire career. Forget about buying that one stock you wanted with a high share price, right? Thankfully, M1 is
looking at you, Amazon.
Hello, Mr. Buffett. M1's completely changed the investing game. You can now build and own a diversified investment portfolio made up of the stocks and ETFs that you pick. Basically, just tell M1 what you want to own, and then M1 automates your plan. If you want, by the way, you can also choose from a bunch of pre-done plans like you'll get with those crazy robos. Choose one of those, make your own. It's all up to you. It's incredibly easy and intuitive to build and customize. And then it's as easy to manage as a savings account. You simply deposit or withdraw money. M1 uses intelligent automation and fractional shares to invest every penny in the most efficient way possible. This is the comprehensive investing platform. What does it cost? Let me tell you, your first $1,000 is free, and they charge only 0.25% for all balances up to $100,000, and then 0.15 if you're over $100,000. Do yourself a favor, check it out on the web at stackingbenjamins.com/M1finance. That's stackingbenjamins.com/M1finance. Of course, you go that way, they know that we sent you. You can also check it out on the Slick mobile app. I'll tell you, it's easier for me, and they do have a really slick mobile app on iOS and Android, but it's easier online to sign up. Sign up is so easy, but it is a little easy. You get the full keyboard. You know what I mean? StackingBenjamins.com/M1finance. And let's talk about your budget, because if you've ever been frustrated, the tool you're using to manage your money wasn't flexible enough, then you haven't met Tiller Money. Tiller's the only personal finance tool giving you complete control over how you manage your money. They automatically pull your latest spending and earnings transactions and account balances into a Google Sheet for you every day. Choose from a variety of powerful and easy-to-use pre-built templates or harness Tiller's power to build your own sheet. You know what's cool? We've got a Stacking Benjamin sheet over there, and you'll find it at stackingbenjamins.com/Tiller, T-I-L-L-E-R. As our own Kathleen Selman said, Tiller Money, it's like Google Sheets and Mint had a baby, because they'll pull it all up for you every day. You got the latest, the greatest. You can manipulate it however you need to. Make it as simple or as complex as you want. StackingBenjamins.com/Tiller. All right. Big show today. We got some fantastic headlines. Amazon bestselling author Al Zenick. So let's get this party started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from Money Watch over at CBS News. I actually went to the Money Watch studios when we recorded an episode for Jill Schlesinger's podcast.
Which I remember you saying that. It was about a year ago.
It feels like a year ago.
And no, it wasn't.
Episode. 6 months ago. It was less than that, man. It was two months ago. And that episode still hasn't aired over on Jill's show, but I will be a guest on Jill's show. But anyway, she took me on a tour, and we saw where they do CBS this morning, but we saw Money Watch. It was really neat looking at a bunch of nerds on the computer. You know, like, looks a little bit like what we do here in the basement, except there's like 40 of them instead
of... Way more lights.
Yeah, right, right.
A lot brighter.
But this is bad news for Money Watch, OG. Seniors beware, new con targets Social Security checks. Government officials are warning about a rash of cons targeting Social Security beneficiaries. Why do these scam artists, like, they're like, okay, I'm
gotta fish where the fish are.
Yeah, I'm gonna burn in hell. Let's go burn in the place where I'm like the inner circle. Like, let's go take advantage of the old people. It says, posing as agents for the government's cornerstone retirement program, the latest con tries to trick seniors into, quote, verifying private information, including Social Security numbers, birth dates, and parents' name, purportedly to provide the senior with a cost of living increase in their benefits. So they tell you you're going to get more money. We just got to verify some stuff. We're going to give you more. And then they take it all.
That's pleasant.
It comes down to this. When you get an official-looking email, right? You get an official sounding call. A relative of mine just got a call, by the way, supposedly from Microsoft. They were fixing her computer and they needed to verify some stuff, right?
Nice. We just need your American Express card.
Well, and here's the funny thing, OG. When she hung up on them, here's how brazen they are. They called back. They said, ma'am, I don't think you understand how important this is.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's closing the deal. That's Glengarry Glen Ross closing.
It's seriously, if somebody calls you, if somebody emails you, you know what? For Social Security, call the Social Security Administration. Hang up the phone, call the Social Security Administration.
Wait on hold for 3 hours.
Exactly.
Then right. Explain to the person you talk to about what's going on.
You know what I found, OG? Call the first thing they open. And that works with the IRS too. Whenever we'd have to call Social Security or we'd have to call the IRS, right when they open. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is no one is going to call you. No one is going to email you, specifically email, right? To get your social, to get your bank account information, you know, any of that sort of stuff, right? I mean, even in our business, when we need those things, like if a client says, send me a check to my bank account, it's obviously we need their banking information. We send it through a secure email, you know, so it's encrypted. They get an email that says, you have a secure message waiting for you at this place.
Right.
So they have to log in. They have to do all that other sort of stuff. And if it's just a, you know, you hear about these things all the time, right? Scams to get Social Security cards, scams to get bank information, scams to get your credit cards. And it all starts with kind of the same thing, an email that says, we need to verify some information. Click here.
Well, Shannon Allen, on you know, just a couple of weeks ago, telling the story about her $52,000 that she lost to a hacker and had to fight forever to get that money back. I mean, that was absolutely...
Well, this stuff is... I mean, this isn't just something that happens to other people. This happens to everyone. I mean, my father-in-law, we were on vacation and he was up there and he says, hey, I got an email from Fidelity that they need to update my account number.
Yes.
I said, huh? And he says, well, don't I have some money at Fidelity? I said, no, not for 5 years. No. Oh, so they don't need my account number? I'm like, no, that's not it. It's not that they don't need your account number. It's that this is a scam email.
It's that you're getting scammed, right?
Yeah.
It says in this piece, this is only the latest in a series of schemes that involve crooks impersonating Social Security staff to steal or extort money. Social Security's Office of Inspector General sent out 2 alerts in March over a fraud that starts with a recorded phone call warning seniors about a problem with their benefit checks. And then they go from there. It's just...
Did they send that warning out via email?
Yeah. I'll link to
If I was a bad guy, I would send an email warning about emails, warning about bad actors, but in reality, recognizing that they're... Anyway.
Yeah. Kathy Kristoff wrote that piece for CBS Money Watch. Our second headline comes to us from a place we go to headlines fairly often, and usually because I like them, OG. This is from financial-planning.com, the place where financial planners, industry rag for financial planners. And this piece is written by Lee Conrad. Top funds by 3-year returns.
I love it. Okay, cool.
It's one thing. It's one thing for Money Magazine to do this, right? Because there's a consumer born every minute who's going to go, oh yeah, last 3 years, probably pretty damn good. I got to go get mine. But to have this in a rag for industry experts, what? Yeah. Why is there?
Well, do you want me to tell you why?
Well,
I mean, you can figure it out. Maybe other people can too. This Financial Planning Magazine, it's not a pro bono effort, right? They're in to generate a profit for their magazine. How do they generate profit? They sell advertising space. Who buys advertising space? Mutual fund companies. And if you write kind of scathing emails about mutual funds, you know, or short duration mutual funds type, you know, track records, you're probably not going to get advertising revenue. So you got to grease the skids a little bit.
No, that's true. But there's probably people listening who don't realize, I went into my rant about that this is bad and we shouldn't do it, especially shouldn't do it with an industry insider publication like Financial Planning. But let's talk about why don't you want to look, OG, at the last 3-year return on your mutual fund?
You shouldn't have a mutual. I mean, if it's an equity mutual fund, you shouldn't have it if the time horizon is only 3 years. It's too short of a time, right? It's not a market cycle. You have no idea how it performs during the downsides. You know? I mean, and it doesn't matter. This is a trick question. You're going to get me fired up, and I'm spitting the hook.
But there's been so many studies out there, guys, that show that the funds that did best the last 3 years are funds often underperform the next 3 years. And it's partly because of what OG's saying, which is the market cycle. The cycle changes. These funds are geared up for this particular market cycle, so they perform well. So the number one reason to not buy a fund, well, not the number one reason, but a great reason to not buy a fund is because it appears on this list. I would love to sit on this list for 3 years, see exactly, you know, what's going on 3 years from now, and see if any of these funds make the cut. I just wanted to bring that up. Very, very frustrating. The average three-year return of funds on this list, listen to this, average three-year return, sexy, 19% compared to 11 for the S&P 500.
Oh, well, geez, there you go.
We almost...
If you would have only invested all of your holdings in Amazon, Netflix, Facebook, and Google this entire time, you'd be a gozillionaire.
If I had a DeLorean and I could go back and get hit on by my mom, I could also... You didn't see Back to the Future?
I did, but that wasn't the main selling point of the movie for me. I mean, obviously there are different takeaways for different people in there. Whatever you're into, buddy.
I'm not saying I'm trying I'm trying to get hit on by mom. I'm just saying that's what
really
happened.
The first thing that came out of your mouth.
That's a little side creepy thing that happens.
Side business that you're into?
Calvin? Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, not good. So the lesson here... Besides, don't get hit on by your mom. What'd you learn on today's show? I don't want to get hit on by my mom. I'm not listening to that show. The two lessons here, three-year return, ignore it on your mutual fund. And somebody calls you telling you that this thing that you own needs to be verified. Hang up the phone, dial directly to the provider, and then see what the real truth is. Al Zenick, getting ready to come down to the basement. He's the president, chief executive officer, and founder of Troust Solis. He's a certified public accountant, a.k.a. CPAOG. See, I know my acronyms, CPA. And a personal financial specialist, that's PFS. I don't know if you knew that. Over 30 years of experience transforming lives through empowering people to make better financial choices. He is also the author of the hot new book on Amazon bestseller, Master Your Cash Flow. Let's say hello to Al Zenick coming down to the basement. And Al Zenick joins us in the basement. Welcome, man. Have a seat. How are you?
Doing great, Joe. Glad to be here.
Well, fantastic. Now, when did you discover that instead of everybody else, as you know, being a money guy, people focus on net worth, they focus on their balance sheet. When did you discover that cash flow was kind of the key to everything?
Well, Joe, it's really funny you say that. You know, I'm a CPA and I began my CPA practice many years ago. And quite frankly, I guess like most people, I found out by when I first got in trouble and I had problems with cash flow.
Oh, really? Tell me that story, because nothing I like better than a train wreck to start the interview.
Well, and you have probably a great example of a train wreck. I had a nice practice going. I was building it and I decided to do other things. I'm a high energy person. I got into politics in my small town, got into town council. I started buying some property. I got into some other business ventures. But quite frankly, I didn't spend enough time looking at them. I just thought it was all going to take care of itself. And all of a sudden, I wound up having a tremendous amount of negative cash flow per month. And I had to start giving that stuff away. And that's when the aha moment came for me.
Wow. So for you, it was kind of a desperation moment.
That's exactly right, Joe. In fact, I remember sitting down with my wife at one time in our home. We had a very nice Victorian house. And I said, I'm not sure by the time this is all over, we're going to be able to keep this house. And, she was just a great person. She cried a bit and said, okay, now what do we do to start putting this together?
Wow. So let's back up a second because I want to continue with that story. But you then don't just see this with you. You see it with a lot of people that you work with.
It's really funny. And I know that you would get this as a money guy. I tell this story. It's like if a person's sitting there and they're on fire, like, they put gas themselves and they light a match and they're on fire. You expect them to get up, hop up and down, scream, whatever, right? And so it's like me sitting with a person and I see some of the things they're doing. It's like they're on fire, but they don't know it.
That's a horrible place to be. But one of the things as a money guy then that you look at that say, you know what, you're on fire, that somebody listening to the show wouldn't have any clue that they're on fire.
Well, it's sometimes when they come in to see me and basically you can see that they're bringing in so much of an income, but they're spending more of it. Okay. And sometimes they don't know it. They're running up the credit card debt. They're doing other things. Again, they're borrowing. And then especially if they're self-employed and have a business, they start getting behind on their taxes. They start getting behind on paying in, like, let's say the payroll taxes for their employees. they're doing all this, but they don't stop to look at what the root problem is.
Often, what is the root problem? Because I think the average person has a handle on maybe the day-to-day expenses, and that might be naive. Maybe that is the problem. But I think the average person has that. What is it, the emergencies? Is it stuff that comes up? What are some of the issues?
Being in this business a long time, there are many, but I really think it's because people, they get so busy just being busy, is that they don't take the time even sometimes to watch what they themselves are spending. They don't take the time to, like, how can I say it? It's like if you want to be in good health, you know what, you eat well at least sometimes, and maybe you work out once or twice a week, but you start doing something about it. If a person is so busy they can't even look at their cash flow on a monthly basis, even if they're writing it down in the back of an envelope, that should be a big signal that they're not taking care of their health financially. And I see an awful lot of people doing that, no matter what they earn, no matter how much they own or what worth they are.
Do you like some of the apps that are out there, maybe Mint or Money Lion or Clarity Money, some of these budgeting apps where they kind of help you at least track what you spend?
You know, there are some really great apps and there's some great tools out there. But, you know, I think you can understand this too. People don't get up in the morning and say, yeah, I feel great this morning. Let's get to that cash flow. Let me sit down and see how much I'm spending today. You know, there's so many other things that seem better or more entertaining. And so even though those apps are out there, very few people, I think, are really using them effectively.
Yeah. So one of your points early on in your book, Master Your Cash Flow, is that you shouldn't set off on the journey without a map. Tell me about using a map when it comes to your cash flow.
Well, it's like this. It's like you're in Texas and you want to go to New York City. You can get in the car. And, you know, if you have any sense of direction, you know, New York is about, it's north and it's going to be east. And there's enough highways you can keep on looking at north and east that eventually you'll get there. But, you know, if you just took out a map or maybe Waze or something, and you basically planned your trip, like how many days is it going to take me? How much money should I take with me? Where can I stop and spend things, you know, time overnight? You might find that you get there in better shape. You might find you get there sooner and without less wear and tear. And that's what like a financial plan is like there's a destination you want to get to. And what's the most efficient way to do it?
That makes sense to have a written map. And obviously, it seems like person after person that comes on this show, Al, talks about the importance of having a written game plan. But as you know, from, as you said, lots of years in the trenches, right? That people, why don't we write it down, even though people like you and I talk about this all the time?
Well, people don't really get serious about their finances, or let's say retirement, if you want to call it that, until they're in their late 40s, early 50s, to where, you know, 60 doesn't look that far away all of a sudden. I know it's very tough to get younger people, 20s, 30s, maybe even to 40, to really focus on it, because yeah, it's almost like they think it's going to happen somewhere down the road or everything's going to be okay.
That's what I get so excited when I hear, you know, 20 something year olds write into us about the show, because, man, I think if more people did that, that would be great. You also talk about, though, that people have emotional fears and they've got emotional baggage that they bring to changing cash flow. Is that because when cash flow is tight, you have to make big changes and they're not willing to make those? What is it? What type of emotional baggage we bring into the table?
Well, I think there's a lot of emotions around money overall, but I think the one that they don't like if things get tight is that, you know, it seems like the pendulum for some people swing to where they're not watching it. Then all of a sudden they have to cut everything. And in that case, you know, people can feel like they're a failure. They can feel like they're not successful. And so it's very hard to get them to basically see that you can get beyond that. Some of the other emotions I see around money is that people fear it. They fear that they can make bad decisions. They see other people making bad decisions. They see sometimes crashes in the market, or they themselves have made poor decisions. So there's all types of emotions around when either money is tight or bad things occur.
So let's dive in a little bit. What I like about your approach is that a lot of people start off with, well, cut this thing, cut this thing, cut this thing, cut this thing. You talk about first, have your map of where you want to go, then obviously that will lead you to what you keep and what you cut when it comes to getting better cash flow. But you have, and I want to spend a little time on this, you have a formula, your wealth building formula that you recommend people use. And I like it because when I was a financial planner, I had a very similar formula. But can you walk us through the formula people should use to decide how to create better cash flow?
Well, as you can see from the formula that I use, it's basically get to know what kind of wealth you need at some time in the future and what time frame and basically what you need to return on it. But it all comes down to the cash flow that you need. What you need in today's dollars to live the lifestyle that you wish now and in the future. And basically all the formula is, and I'm sure yours was the same way, is how to make the best cash flow decision.
Right.
Are you going to rent or lease a car? And the thing is, the answer is, what is the best cash answer for that? If it's better to lease a car because you're paying less cash flow for it, that's the better answer. So the wealth building formula is basically a formula that allows you to make the best financial decision in any circumstance you have when you're making a financial decision.
So it's the amount of wealth times the amount of time. Is that the amount of time toward the goal or time in the goal? What's the time piece?
Well, it's actually a multi. It's a time to when you want to be, you want to stop working,
okay,
or you reach your goal, but also the rest of your life.
Well, and I like what you say about these because there's three pieces to this, right? So if it's wealth and time and return, I mean, if we take that wealth piece, if that wealth number is high that you're going to need, obviously, if you can't reach the goal, you'll either have to then make the time to the goal longer or increase the rate of return. So it's like the decision kind of makes itself.
That's so great. You know, you hit the essence of it. If you see that you're making a decision that allows you to save more cash flow, more wealth, what does it do? That means you get to your goals sooner, or you have more wealth when you get to your goals. If you're making a decision that's going to take away from your wealth or not give you as much cash flow, well, then basically you're going to work longer and harder. So that's the simplicity of it, is that every decision you make is going to come down to, do you want to work longer, harder? Do you want more wealth or less? And what cash flow is that going to wind up to be for you?
When you talk about the rate of return piece of this equation, Al, I know that, you know, you and I have heard Dave Ramsey talk about 12%, and I personally roll my eyes when I hear 12%. What's a reasonable number, let's say, for a 15-year time frame for us to put into that without taking too much risk?
Well, of course, when you talk about investment, that's a whole area. But I like to look at it as a function of inflation.
Okay.
And I think that basically a 3 to 4% possibly 5, but I guess a little too high, but a 3 to 4% above the rate of inflation is a really realistic and moderate risk goal to take when you're looking at investment.
Awesome. And that's exciting about your formula too, Al, is that when you look at the equation, I mean, the wealth and the time, you put those two things in, people, as you know, get freaked out about investing, but this leads you to a much smaller niche. Like once I know what return I need, I don't have to look at every investment out there. I just only need to look at the ones that fit my particular goal.
That's exactly right. You know, so many people begin with, they think that they're going to reach financial independence or grow great wealth by looking at investments and concentrating there. No, it's not there. It's concentrating on cash flow. You concentrate cash flow and you have a rate of return from the formula that you know you have to meet. Investment becomes simple after that.
Yeah. Now, as a tax guy, you talk about taxes a little bit being a drag on investment. When you take a look at cash flow, how do I increase that using tax shelters inside the U.S. or using U.S. tax law?
You know, it's really funny because I read part of your site where you talk about cheating on your tax from a legal standpoint, right?
Right.
And you hit it right on the head. But just know the rules, because there's so many things out there that you can use legally to save so much in taxes. So basically some simple things for people who work for someone is make sure you're filling up those 401ks and then the IRAs. You know, so many people leave money on the table that the employers give if they're going to match a contribution. So that's one simple thing for a person who works for someone. If a person is self-employed, especially if you're doing well, there's some really great plans out there, cash balance plans or things that can people can save tremendous amounts of money all within the law and have the government let them get to their goals sooner.
You have to have some fantastic stories, I would imagine, of people that have cut things that you might not have expected in a million years. Could you share a story or two, Al, of some of the cash flow jumps you've seen people take by using your formula?
Well, I'll say that one of the biggest ones that I saw, I had a consultant as a client, very nationally renowned person. They were basically frustrated because they were busy. They had a full schedule, but they weren't saving enough and they weren't living the life they wanted. So I sat down with this person. I said, okay, you know, you're charging this amount a day for a person, just double the amount. They looked at me like, are you crazy? People will be upset at me and not like me. And I finally said, okay, we'll just try it with your new clients. And they did. And they found out that no one was bothered by it because he gave terrific value. So he ended up doubling his top line.
Oh.
Just by doubling his fee, which meant that he now could live the life he wanted, save toward the goals he wanted, and pay his taxes.
But everybody's afraid to do that, right? Because you're afraid if you double that fee, the client's going to go away.
They're afraid of that. But also, let's say you work for someone. You know, let's say that you know the person you're working for, whether you're a manager, an executive. Let's say you're not earning the money that you know you need to save and pay your taxes and all. You know, some people find it fearful to really that they may have to change jobs. They may have to change careers. If it's truly you want to live a life the way you want.
Yeah, good stuff. Master Your Cash Flow is the name of the book, The Key to Grow and Retain Wealth. It's an Amazon bestseller. Al, they get this on Amazon and also, I guess, from your site, I would imagine?
Yes, they go to www.alzenek.com. And by the way, if they go there, there's a personal assessment that you can take. It's free of charge, and it might give you some ideas and give you an idea of where you stand.
Awesome. I really like the book, Lessen Stress and Anxiety in Your Life, Make Better Financial Choices, Live the Life You Want Now, Achieve Financial Independence in a Time Frame That's Reasonable for You. By the way, I like this idea, Al, of living the life you want now, because it seems like a lot of people have not enough balance, right? A lot of us are saving for tomorrow, but not doing enough today.
I agree. That's why I say, you know, yeah, I can get you to financial independence really quickly. You know, just eat Franks and beans, live in a shack, don't take vacations, don't get married, don't have kids. But are you going to be happy? So you have to find a balance of being happy. Don't skip the lattes. Take your vacations, because this, like anything else, it's hard work to get to. It's a reward yourself.
Are you saying maybe we shouldn't work in our mom's basement? Is that what you're trying to say?
I think it's a great way to save cash flow.
Al Zenek, thanks for hanging out with us.
It's been a pleasure, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Gone and another one's gone. Another one. Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor Doug, and I'm excited to report that another one has bitten the dust. Our social media community manager Shannon just was broadsided by a Girl Scout cookie drive. She's out of the Master Your Cash Flow competition, and I'm one step closer to winning, baby. Now it starts to get sticky. It's just Joe, OG, and me. I'll figure that out later, but how about this trivia? How many seasons of the popular show Seinfeld before lead actor and show namesake Jerry Seinfeld cleared $1 million per episode? I'll be back with the answer and probably another person out of our Master Your Cash Flow competition in just a moment.
You know, down here in the basement, we only like to partner with companies we're proud to put our name behind. So we're excited to announce our newest sponsor to the Stacky Benjamin Show, M1 Finance. Recently sat down with Brian Barnes, CEO and founder, and asked him what makes M1 Finance unique.
M1 is one of the only automated investing platforms that allows you to customize the portfolio that you invest in. It creates a lot more engagement and fun in investing while still being easy and low cost.
Anybody who's tried online investing tools or used to compromises, do you pick a traditional self-directed brokerage that hits you with commissions at every trade, or an automated machine makes you hand over the reins? Don't compromise. Scratch out commissions at every turn, take back control of your own portfolio, and take advantage of the uniqueness that's M1 Finance. Takes minutes to sign up. Start by heading over to stackybenjamins.com/M1Finance. M1 Finance, be invested. Disclaimer, by the way, both Cheryl, my spouse, and I use M1 Finance. It works for us, but you need to do your own homework.
Hi, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, the huge star of the award-winning Stacking Benjamin Show. Are you tired of podcasts that blabber on about money? Do you feel like you're just another number for some other host to brag about? Are you confused about all this IRA, SEPP, 72T, and fiduciary talk? At Stacking Benjamins, you're not just another number to us. Heck, if you actually listen, you're the only number. That's why we barely ever talk about money. Better yet, we treat you like family. We'll invite you on down to Joe's mom's basement, serve you some pie and maybe even a little lemonade, and best yet, when you leave, we'll complain about you behind your back. Because that's what real family moments are all about. Hey, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and the good news just keeps on coming. OG was looking at a SkyMall magazine he took off the plane from his last trip, and he just purchased fuzzy dice that also play show tunes. And show producer Richie bought one, too. Well, that puts them out of their misery, so it's just Joe and me. I'll put him away later, but for now, let's get you some trivia. How many of you are familiar with the popular show Seinfeld? How many seasons did it take before lead actor and show namesake Jerry Seinfeld cleared $1 million per episode? The answer? It was in the ninth season of Seinfeld that Jerry finally topped $1 million. His co-stars? While they didn't make a million, they each took home a cool $600,000 an episode, which I'm sure they didn't complain about. Speaking of complaining, Joe's complaining I haven't checked my mail yet. Sounds like I've got something good on the way. See ya!
$1 million an episode. That's pretty close to what we get.
Per episode.
Right? Wouldn't that be great? $1 million to sit and record one of these shows.
I'd take half that.
Are you kidding me? I'd take 20 bucks. if somebody throws a 20, okay, we'll record. Let's do it.
It's the power of intention. We have to.
Let's do it right now.
Don't we have to focus on?
Well, if you were focused, you wouldn't have been broadsided by the SkyMall. What the hell's up with that, man? You buy all the best stuff on SkyMall?
I'm surprised I lasted that long. The rate at which I buy stuff. I mean,
the good news is you're going to sleep soundly tonight.
Oh, well, until tomorrow morning. And then it's a whole new day. Start over.
A whole new adventure of trying to master your cash flow. Mm-hmm. Big thanks to Al Zenick for coming down to the basement. And you know, he's right on there, man. Cash flow. If we can separate out in our head that the amount of money we have available to spend has nothing to do with the amount of money that we get paid.
Comes in, right?
You know, if we can separate those two things and say, this is what I need to live on, this is what I bring in, we're going to do much better with our money.
Agreed. Yep.
Yeah, good stuff. Point. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. You know, there's a lot of important questions, OG, when it comes to life.
How big of a TV do you need?
Right. Which page do you find that TV on the SkyMall magazine?
Which cut of steak are you cooking today for dinner?
Could you imagine buying a television on SkyMall? What would that cost? Would that be like a 30?
Be like a 7 million Delta miles.
For the first half. That's the first installment, right? Yeah. The first installment payment. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they're disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on what you value most, and that is?
Fresh air and apple juice.
Or your money and your time. I mean, it could be either or. I think it's probably your money and your time, though, I think.
We'll disagree.
You know what's funny? It's not even your money. Haven Life has been with us forever. It's your family and your time. That's so great. Duh. Yeah. They were the first life insurance startup that's also wholly owned by industry giant MassMutual to create a high-quality, affordable term life insurance policy you can purchase entirely online. And qualified healthy applicants, they can skip the medical exam. I didn't mean skip to the medical exam. I mean, they can completely not go, not have it, nada, gone, out of here, forget it. See ya later. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to our buddy, John. John, say hello.
Hey, on show 500, you mentioned the importance of taking a vacation, but what if you are a contract employee? I'm a currently contracted hire employee for next 3 to 6 months, and we don't get paid for vacation. So if I take like 10 days off, then that's 10 days I don't get paid. What would you recommend for that as far as summer vacations go? Thank you, guys. Love your show. Bye.
Good stuff, John. Thanks for the question. John. Yeah, let's talk about this. And we've had this call before. I remember someone telling me that they were a nurse and we were talking about a sabbatical. She's like, I can't take a year off. If I take a year off, I get canned. I don't have the job anymore. So, you know, let's talk about life for the rest of us.
The way that I would approach the contract work vacation problem is the same way that I would approach it if you're a commission salesperson, right? There's plenty of people who work on commission. If you're not out there selling something, you're not earning a commission that day. So what you have to do is, from a budgeting standpoint, or to borrow our theme from today, a cash flow standpoint, you want to look at your annual cash flow and then divide that out by what you think you're going to take for time off. So if you're going to take 3 weeks of vacation, instead of taking your pay over, you know, divided by 52 weeks, right? So I make an average of $1,000 a week, you know, in commission sales. I'm just going to take that 52,000 divided by 47 weeks. And that's what I'm going to, you know, have to budget my life on so that those other 3 weeks are kind of paid for, so to speak, in there. You know what I mean? Now, you can't do that day one, right? I mean, you just start your contract job. You can't take next week off. But that's really the only way to do it.
Yeah, you have to, John, take your paycheck, the contract paycheck you get, have that direct deposited, not to your checking account, have it direct deposited to a separate savings account, and then set up the amount of money you need to live, budget that money into your checking account. So set up an automatic transfer, maybe once a month, over from that savings that you have less access to the money that you spend account. And what that does is then money builds up in that savings account. So you can do what OG said. But I think the big thing here, to get away from just the financial, like, you know, the technique and the tactics, the key to earning money is to stay fresh. And you can't burn the candle on both ends forever. And Laura Vanderkam, who's a productivity expert, been on the show a couple times. I mean, she's got tons of data showing that you really need to recharge that battery.
Well, what's the Abraham Lincoln quote? I think is from Abraham Lincoln. If I was given 10 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first eight hours sharpening the axe.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So you can't, yeah.
Well, and when Austin Kleon was on the show, and I think we did talk about this, so I'm not going to belabor the point in the 500th episode, that those things you do on vacation inform your work. Now, you also have to realize, especially, you know, for John, if John's a contract employees are the first people to go, right? When things get bad. Yeah. Not in every case, like I don't know where John works, but I know in a lot of companies, they hire contractors to just fill in. So I want to be somebody that they can rely on. So instead of taking a 10-day vacation, I might take a long weekend.
Well, and how about if you're a contract employee and you've got a contract deal for 6 months, before you start the next contract, you take a week off.
Yeah.
And right? you do your six months, you work your butt off, and then you go, I'll be back, you know, a week from Monday.
And John knows better than we know about that. So I agree with what he says, or what he's implying anyway, is that there's got to be this balance, and you got to find that equilibrium. Thanks a ton, John, for the question. If you've got a question, would like us to throw out the lifeline to you, it's stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail, or just head to the Stacking Benjamins homepage, stackingbenjamins.com, and you'll see questions at the top of the website. Just click the link there and you're all set to go. Doug also brings down the mail, and our good friend Aaron. Aaron's somebody who's been with us for quite a while, and we love getting letters from Aaron. Aaron said, good morning, Joe. Thanks for all the great shows with great information you know G share. It's always appreciated. A while back, you spoke over several episodes about wanting to get a Nest thermostat. Don't recall ever hearing that you actually purchased one. Listening to Roger Whitney's Retirement Answer Man, he recently shared that you did purchase one. Roger's talking about me on his show, OG.
Is that highest form of flattery?
Apparently so.
If you're talked about on another man's podcast,
I don't know where you're going with that, but I'm wondering, what did you think of it? I'm sure it's fun to play with, but have you noticed the change in your electric bill? Do you think it's worth the cost? Thanks for continuing to not teach us anything. The answer is in the place, Aaron, that I'm finding the biggest change, two spots, because I'm here alone and our house is a two-level house. I can actually make it so that the level that we don't use during the day is because I'm sitting here in the basement.
Literally in the basement. Everybody thinks we're joking about that.
I know. So I can turn that off, and it is really, really warm here in Texas in the summer. But I don't worry about that. I go up for lunch, and I can actually have it turn on just before it. So I did see a nice bump in my electric bill. I'll get back to that. The other big thing is that I've been traveling a lot lately, and with travel, I always forget to change my thermostat when I travel. And I got to tell you, man, like the last three times I've traveled, I have been maybe a day into it and went, oh, I forgot to change it. And I literally just open up my app, hit the away button, and bam. So
87 degrees in your house.
Yeah. So I've found about a 15% difference in my bill. So it's going to take me because my, you know what you want to do, and I think you might've done this with yours, OG. You want to check with your utility company because they will often subsidize the cost. I didn't have that. So it's going to probably still take me a little while to get that thing paid for. But for you, that's not the case.
Well, and I think that there's another piece to that too that's missing, not just the direct costs that you're saving, but the wear and tear on your machine, right? If it's not running all that time, how much extra life does that add on the back end of your heating and cooling unit? Certainly, there's probably a study by Nest somewhere on how that works. But yeah, ours was subsidized a little bit. I can't remember what we got off the electric company, but then they give us a credit. The way ours works is we had to sign up for like this program called... I don't know. I can't remember the name of it. But basically, it's some kind of program where if it's going to be a really high energy day, right, if it's hotter than the face of the sun that day, they can send you an alert and say, yeah, we're going to turn off your air conditioning today. Now, you can override that. So people are like, oh, my gosh, I don't want them. No, you override it. And what they do is it's only for a two-hour block, and they pre-cool your house. So basically, it goes, okay, we're going to shut it off at 4, from 4 till 6. You know, we don't want you to run the AC. But at 4 o'clock, it's going to be 68 degrees in your house. And then from 4 till 6, it's going to creep up to 77. And then at 6, we'll turn it back on again, you know, type of deal. But you can override that. And to do that, we got a credit on our statement. We get a credit every month. And so I can't tell you, I didn't really pay that close of attention, like in terms of
you were
how much
at
the
first.
Electric was.
You were at first. Yeah. Well, and that's my problem too, is that, I mean, looking at that,
but it's a new normal number now, right? Like I can't, I could go back and look and see.
Yes.
Plus
yes.
We got ours kind of right away when we bought our house.
Yeah.
So I didn't have like a long, you know, a long track record of what the old one was, but all the things you mentioned, right? Like going, oh shoot, I've been gone all day or I'm gone for the next week. You can pull it up on your phone. We did this on the way home from vacation. In fact, this is how I knew that our AC was broken.
Yeah.
When we got home from vacation, because we had, you know, and God knows where, Missouri, we had clicked the button to say, cool it down. We got home and it was not cooled down. I went, something's wrong. You know, it should be, you know, cooler in here. So.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is that, you know, when I've flown in from the, you know, I get to the airport, I hit that I'm home and I've got,
you walk in and it's nice.
Yep. And it's ready to go. Good stuff, Aaron. I really like that. And you know what she said? She said, I know it's fun to play with, but what about the cost savings? I think just from a usability standpoint, like, you know, a present for the holidays, your birthday, whatever, I think that's it does have a toy factor that's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got Nest cams in the house, right? The video cameras. We've got a couple of smoke detectors that are Nest ones because I had to replace them. And it's nice to have all that stuff kind of in one place.
OG loves the Nest cam because he gets to watch a recorded video of him taking his shirt off. Later on, he goes back.
Thankfully, that was very PG. I knew that you were going to jump on it. I'm just happy that it wasn't PG-13 plus. So, no, it kept that. Speaking of shirts off.
No. Oh, please. Oh, man. Even just the threat of that. Don't do that. Thanks for the letter, Aaron.
Jealous.
If you've
You're just
got
jealous.
Sorry, Aaron, the OG turned your letter into just making my stomach turn. But if you've got a letter and you'd like OG to make your stomach turn, head to stackybenjamins.com and click question for the show. You'll see the Haven Lifeline. You'll see questions for the show. And that's good. Then good stuff. Hey, and also thanks to everybody who's left us a review of this here podcast. You know, people have been very generous lately and we really appreciate it because that helps new people know what they're getting into when they listen to the show. Next, going on Mom's Fridge. This is from GFunk47. Says, my Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning coffee. This is a podcast I listen to first Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's funny, and that's about it. I don't learn anything. Keep up the great work. How about that? That's all you're looking for. And that's perfect. Keep your expectations low, people, and we can exceed it. It's when you start thinking that something might happen on an episode that it all goes haywire, right? Thanks a ton. And if you're looking for good help in your corner, OG is taking clients. And here's how you get on his calendar to find out more. StackingBenjamins.com/O and the letter G. And he can tell you then more about what it would take to have him helping you with your personal financial plan. That's going to do it for today. Coming up on Wednesday, talking about financial planning. You know, you and I talk a lot about different aspects of financial planning, but we don't take a lot of time to talk about the process. And certified financial planner Jason Mirabella coming down to the basement. He has a website called henfruit.com, does a lot of videos over there, a lot of instructions, some really cool stuff. Jason's going to talk about the problem that he sees. And you know what, OG? He and I have already talked a little bit. You and he totally agree.
Peas in a pod.
Spending too much time talking about the wrong crap. And he's going to walk through that process. And I'm sure it's a great interview. He's an interesting guy. Jason Mirabella on Wednesday with us, plus the normal tomfoolery. We'll see everybody back here on Wednesday. Go stack some Benjamins. Doug, what should we have learned today?
Go back to looking at the lingerie section of the Sears catalog, Joe. I got this. First, take Al Zenick's advice. Cash flow is the key to your success. By keeping expenses low when compared to your income, you can accomplish lots of goals you may have thought were unattainable. Second, Social Security. Scammers are getting more crafty every day. If you're receiving Social Security or know someone receiving it, don't talk to anyone about your checks, even if you receive legitimate-looking email or a letter. Call the Social Security Administration. But the big lesson? 10 cassette tapes for one penny? That's the world's best deal, isn't it? Isn't it? I'm signing up right now. I can't resist. A big thank you to Al Zenick for stopping by. You'll find a link to his book, Master Your Cash Flow, on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Kathleen Selmans handles design, newsletter, and classroom opportunities. If you'd like to learn more, head to stackingbenjamins.com/classes. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I just noticed it's just as dark and damp down here as Joe's soul. SB Podcast may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And a big no thanks to Joe for sharing with me that all those cassettes are just a come-on to ruin my cash flow. Foiled again! Ugh! Hey, guys, what prize do I get for second place in this thing?
You know, you had a story last Wednesday about sandwiches and about Subway, and we totally
just kind of spaced on it.
Yeah.
So when I lived in my former abode, there was a sandwich shop by a Subway shop, and it was close enough that it was just kind of a quick drive, you know, just in the corner there. And boy, the guy who made the sandwiches there, I'm sure you've had this too, right? Where it's just the nicest person, right? You're like, this guy whistles while he works and always had a line out the door for lunch, and everybody knew him, and he knew every, you know, the UPS guy, he knew the FedEx guy, and he was always like, oh, you know, the double turkey with cheese.
Really?
Right? Like, he was that guy, right?
Really?
And older guy, right? So he's probably like in his 50s. And I was just so impressed with that. And here we are, it's like 2008, right? The economy's taking a crap. 2009, the economy's taking a crap. And here's this dude,
working
he's just
at Subway.
Yeah, he's just hustling, right? Yeah. He's like, hey, just you know, making lemonade out of lemons, right?
But you know what's funny about that? Just not to cut you off, but what's funny about that? It's actually more fun for him. And
I
sit and I think about that when I was in financial planning at one of our offices in Southfield. The woman that works there, I don't know if she still works there, Linda James. Hey, Linda. Linda will tell you, be the first one to tell you, she was not a great receptionist. Then she went to this Nordstrom training, and the big thing that hit her was it would make her day more fun if she was more personable and stopped just hating her job. And by the way, to his credit, it was her boss that sent her to that instead of firing her. And it ended up great for everybody, right? Ended up great for the boss, ended up great for her. It was just fit. And Linda was just an amazing receptionist then. But anyway.
Yeah. So, you go to Subway all the time when it's real close, right? It's like that or Jimmy John's, just a quick sandwich. And every time, hey, how's it going? He didn't know my name, right? Hey, how's it going? You like the roasted turkey, right? You know, and he just, you know, I mean, real quick. And
fantastic.
I bring my sons in there and like, this is how you work really hard. And he had all the kids working with him. And, you know, he's like the old grandpa. I mean, he wasn't a grandpa age,
sure,
but he
right.
was, you know, kind of like your age. And
thanks. Oh my
God. But anyway, fast forward some time later, right? We were members of a small country club, which sounds maybe more pompous than it needs to be, but whatever. And I'm sitting at the bar. We had just become members, and I'm trying to kind of get my bearings, and I'm talking to the bartender, and this guy walks in and, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, I recognize this guy's voice, right? And I look over and I'm like, who the hell is that? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, kind of drumming my fingers, trying to figure out who this person is, right? And so I said to the bartender, I said, do you know who that was? And she says, oh yeah, that's Mr. So and who's it? I'm like, what does he do? And she goes, oh, he owns like 12 Subways. He was whistling while I worked, all right, because he owned the damn thing.
Yeah, but still.
And here I am.
But still,
well, yeah,
what a great,
I told him this story.
Still,
but
what a great role model.
Yeah, well, that's the point, right? And I guess I learned a lot from that whole interaction. One was the, you know, just have fun with what you're doing, right? And number two, he was setting a great example, like you said. All the people that worked there, by the way. That I didn't know that at the time. All of them were his kids, right? So all the people on the line or whatever were all of his kids. And he owned a half dozen of them or something like that across the Metroplex. And I was like, what a plain guy that everybody probably looks at the same way that I do, but carries himself well. And I never got out of him like, oh, look at me. I'm Mr. Business Owner that
yes.
owns a dozen Subways. He was never there with a tie and a clipboard, you know, or anything like that. He's making sandwiches.
Yeah. You ever hear comedian Jim Gaffigan talk about Subway?
Probably, but let's hear it.
But Domino's, they're doing the sandwiches because of the success of those Subway restaurants, right? Those Subway restaurants are everywhere. I got one backstage in my bathroom. Subway. That was a bit of a disappointment. Subway, right? You're like, hey, Subway, eat fresh. And then you bite in, you're like, not so fresh. Not fresh at all. Even if you haven't been to Subway, you probably walked by and breathed in that bread exhaust they pump out. Yeah. Ah, the smell of bread that was just baked in a dirty dishwasher. I don't know if it's making me hungry or concerned for the ozone. But I go to Subway, you know, and not just because it's fun watching a clinically depressed person throw together your sandwich. They make it right in front of us. You'd think they'd do it with a little bit of flair. You want mayonnaise? Sure. I feel like I'm at Benihana. Can I get my picture with you? It's kind of awkward while they make your sandwich. You just stand there wishing the sneeze guard was facing the other way.
This guy's the opposite of that, though, that you're talking about.
He sure was. Yeah.
He's certainly not clinically depressed.
No, he was not. Great guy. Great young man. Happy to have him as a friend now. But I told him that story. I said, you know, I thought you were the old unemployed dude that had just barely, you know, barely stranded together.
He must have loved that. I'm sure
he did.
Yes.
He was like, that's what I'm going for. Like, I'm not, that's, first of all, it's who I am, right? I'm just a happy-go-lucky guy.
Yeah.
But it's like the Five Guys episode we were talking about last week of how I built this.
Yeah.
The Five Guys episode, he says, well, what do you do for work? He says, I make hamburgers.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Because that's what he does.
Make hamburgers.
He just makes a crap load of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 1,300 stores worth.
Yeah. He makes way more hamburgers than you think he makes.
Yeah, exactly.